We have a World Series champ. Congratulations to the Kansas City Royals, and welcome everybody to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Adam Azer, Scott White, and Al Melchior. And today we're talking about players that we might have some trouble ranking in 2016. Hello, gentlemen. How's the parade looking on your laptop?
Crowded. Really, really crowded. And fun.
Yeah.
And crowded.
They're watching it live stream. What a boring thing to watch. Why would you subject yourself to that?
I didn't really go out of my way. I had my Twitter window open, and everybody's tweeting about that, either that or the new hearts for liking things on Twitter.
Yeah, somebody explain that to me. What is going on here with Twitter?
Well, you know how Twitter has this little convention called the favorite?
I do.
Star, and you favorite a tweet. Well, it's now like and a heart instead of a favorite and a star.
A heart.
I saw this morning, and I was like, huh, that's curious. they went from one Lucky Charm shape to another. I didn't really think much of it beyond that, though. Apparently, others are outraged. There's outrage.
Nobody likes change, Scott. And I remember you being somewhat of a cereal snob, so I will ask you your opinion on Lucky Charms.
Oh, Lucky Charms top five.
Oh, okay.
Top five.
Yeah,
sometimes
solid.
I go for the chocolate Lucky Charms, but it's just a little too much. I regret it about two bowls in.
Two bowls in.
Wow. Well, I'm not eating all the bowls at once, but
I see.
I'm working my way through the box gradually.
Well, let's take a look at some baseball stuff after our cereal discussion wraps up. You guys have any thoughts on the World Series? Are you worried about Matt Harvey now? Oh my goodness, is he throwing a lot of innings? How about 217 innings when they wanted him to throw 180? Let's belabor a point that we already belabored last week.
His velocity was back up that last start, Adam. Didn't you see?
Not in the ninth inning. That was pretty stupid.
No, he was throwing 96 in the ninth.
I thought I saw like a 94 in there, and I saw one ball get rocketed, and I saw him walk someone, so he shouldn't have pitched the night. He should be at, well, I guess he didn't record any outs, so the inning count wouldn't really be the same, but he pitched one too many innings, Mets fans, as they all know.
See, yeah, that's why the innings count doesn't mean anything, because you have all those remnants for the innings you can't finish.
You know the velocity doesn't matter. It's the grand scheme of things.
The wear and tear, long term. I'm a little worried. I think I said last time I would discount him slightly. I'm in the same place. I mean, it's just eight plus innings later.
Yeah.
Than the last time we talked about it. So I'm in the same place.
And I should clarify. I think last week I said he wouldn't be the first guy back from Tommy John surgery to throw 200 innings. And I still don't know. He may not be the first. But I do think I saw that this is the most innings a pitcher has thrown in his first year back from Tommy John surgery. But at the same time, he had a year and a half to recover, and most pitchers don't get that much these days. So I don't know. I think you could have a lot of worry about a lot of pitchers, and I don't know that I just don't feel as concerned about it as you guys do, I guess, because you know, anybody who throws 95, 96 consistently is at risk any year.
And, you know, to put it in perspective, I'm not going to discount him as much as I discounted Masahiro Tanaka going into this year because we had, an actual injury in that case.
So
there's, you know, and I still picked him up in Scott's Dynasty League. That was an auction league.
Tanaka.
Tanaka. I think I picked him up in any other leagues, but I mean, the point is, I discounted him, but was still willing to take the chance if I could get him at a good, what I thought was a good price, which still wasn't that cheap. So I'll be even less reluctant to pick up Harvey in the spring.
Fifth round for Harvey. Too early, too late, just right. What do you think?
Sounds about right to me.
Depends. It depends kind of where all the other starting pitchers are going. I feel like a lot of times there's a third-round pitcher run, and I could see him being a part of that because I have him ninth in my rankings. So ninth, third, fourth, fifth probably at the latest.
All right, let's jump around a little bit, but not like physically actually
do it. I was going to say, won't that mess up the sound?
I probably would, yeah. I wouldn't recommend it. We'll move around in the notes a little bit. We'll take your emails later at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I was looking at some third base stats before this podcast, and I saw that, you know, when you look at the stats page, if you sort to all players, it tells you the who's the best over the last 3 years, average-wise over the last 3 years, like who has averaged the most production in fantasy. Kyle Seager is the number two third baseman in fantasy over the last 3 years combined on average. So now that kind of surprised me a little bit. He's been very consistent. Of course, there's been a youth movement at third base, so you don't have the Arenados and the Machados in there. But, you know, Seager is maybe going to fly under the radar a little bit. He's increased his home run total every year, although granted 25 to 26, 2014 to 2015. But, you know, consistently like right around eighth and kind of a steady option at that position.
I don't think he'll fly under the radar, meaning he's not, I don't think he's going to go for any less value than he really deserves to. I mean, it's an interesting stat and it's a surprising stat. I think it's a little bit misleading because I don't think he's in that discussion for the top three. And
he's not going to be a very important fallback option at the position because in terms of depth, third base really doesn't measure up to even like second base. Now, it's very top heavy. The top five at third base are all first three round types. But then after that, there's maybe four or five others that you feel content starting in a mixed league, and Seager is one of them. So you wouldn't want to wait much longer than him. But I agree with what you're saying, that I don't think he's going to fall beyond where he deserves to go because he's only so productive.
Seager or Beltre?
I have Seager ahead, but I do think Beltre has a little more upside. Just the age and the home run decline the last couple of years has me concerned about him.
Yeah, and I'll go Seager, too, just with the greater chance of decline.
Seager or Frazier?
Frazier.
Yeah, I'll go Frazier.
Okay. Frazier's one of the two guys that I would bring up when we're talking about who we'd have trouble ranking next year. The good news is I don't have to rank anyone, so I'll leave that headache to you guys. Let's read our email of the day at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and this is from AJ in Pomona, California. It says, Dear Tim, Pierce, and Daniel.
Sound like Bonds.
They do sound like Bonds. Is there a new Bond coming out?
Yes, there is.
Are you excited for it?
I've never seen a James Bond movie.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I never really saw any of the older ones. I saw GoldenEye, you know, like a few years ago. It was on TV. It's not that good.
That qualifies.
Yeah, but I didn't see it in theaters. The first one I ever saw in theaters was the first Daniel Craig one, Casino Royale, which is awesome.
And, of course, all the ones I've seen in the theater were long before that.
When was the last time you've been to a theater?
It has been a few years. I would say probably about 3 years.
All right, here's the email.
Impressive.
Wait, 3 years?
Yeah.
I just did one of those like record skips as you rewind and everybody is quiet. 3 years. What was the last movie you saw? My goodness.
In a theater, I honestly couldn't tell you because it's been about 3 years.
Yeah.
I think you would have just accidentally stumbled into one while a movie was playing at some point during that time.
What am I doing? Why is it dark in here? What's going on?
Well, I'll just take a seat.
All right, here's AJ's email. I know Adam brought up a strategy where one of the owners in his 5x5 categories league drafted no starting pitchers and collected all the closers, basically punting wins and strikeouts but securing saves, ERA, and whip. I was very intrigued by this strategy and was wondering if you could go into detail on how to implement it and what formats it would be good for, as well as if it actually worked. I play in a 6x6 categories league with holds and hits as the extra categories with daily transactions. Thanks again. All right, did you guys face any opponents who did this extremely annoying but partially effective strategy?
No. I don't see it happen a lot. I've never tried it myself, but the fact that I don't see it happen a lot probably confirms my suspicions as to it being a very high-risk strategy. I think for it to work, you have to count on yourself being right about all the pitchers you draft, because if you're punting on those counting categories at pitcher, there's no way to change course on the fly. It's over. You're committed from draft day to a certain course of action. And that's a scary way to play, I think.
Well, the only way you can do it is in a head-to-head categories league. And in AJ's particular league, because my league was 5x5 with no holds. In AJ's league with with holds, then I actually think it's a very smart strategy because you could have a leg up on four categories out of six instead of just three out of five. But so basically, the price you pay to draft these closers is going to hurt your hitting. And you have to decide if you're in a league where the hitting is going to be like plentiful enough on the waiver wire where you can make up for it. The guy who did it in the league I was in is actually one of our podcast listeners. And he did okay. I think he finished fifth. I won the league, and he was the one team I wanted to avoid. I hated playing his team because you're probably going to lose three out of five pitching categories every week if you play his team just about every week. So, you know, it was interesting. There has to be either no innings minimum or a very low innings minimum for it to work. And head-to-head categories, and yeah, daily transaction helps as well. So it's an interesting strategy. I think you can win with it because I was talking to our boss, Tobin, about it, Jeff Tobin, and he said there are some guys in his league that do it, and they usually do pretty well.
I can think of one person I've been in a league with who's done it, not to the extreme of literally zero starting pitchers, but I think maybe two. And he did very well. He didn't win, but I want to say he was top five in a 15-teamer. So, yeah, worked out okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not exactly cheap, but it's like, come on, you wimp. What are you doing?
it's a mark against the head-to-head categories league.
I guess, but it's also a little strategy wrinkle.
What?
It's a little strategy wrinkle.
Is it a strategy or a gimmick?
I think it's a that's a good question.
First person who came up with it was a strategy. Thereafter, it was a gimmick.
Fine. Good point. All right, let's do some news and notes. Last week, remember when we talked about Bud Black, his hiring, and how it would affect the Nationals?
Scratch it.
yeah, forget about that. Dusty Baker is their manager now. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Oh.
Scott had a bunch this morning.
You know what this means, Adam?
What?
We're going to see a lot of Danny Espinosa in 2016. Those thoughts of drafting Trey Turner as the sleeper, they're out the window.
Oh, why? He's not a youth movement guy?
Oh no. Dusty Baker?
Yeah.
That's like, there are not many managers who I really attach tendencies to because they're either not around long enough to really form any clear ones, or if you think there's a clear one, when the personnel changes, it becomes not so clear. But Dusty Baker has never put much faith in the kiddos. And, so a lot of Danny Espinosa instead of Trey Turner. You know, maybe there's a chance. Bryce Harper plays a lot of center, and Clinton Robinson's in the outfield more often than Michael Taylor. Or, a couple years from now, Lucas Giolito comes up, and Dusty Baker's going to blow out his arm. He'll have a second Tommy John surgery. These are the predictions I think are fair to make with Dusty Baker back running a major league club. He's the most annoying manager for fantasy purposes. He's the reason Devin Mesoraco got held back so long in Cincinnati, I feel like, because he was so stuck on Ryan Hannigan catching, and it's annoying. I don't think he's a bad manager, by the way. I think he's fine. He's just not at all invested in player development.
Well, you also mentioned the second Tommy John thing, and actually, I wish I remember the paper. I'm pretty sure I know the newspaper, but I don't want to give credit where credit isn't due, and I don't want to miscite anything. But I did read today, you know, this whole thing about Dusty Baker blowing people's arms out and throwing them too many innings and too many pitches. Like, people blame him for Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. He did change his ways with the Reds and kind of, you know, he got with the times, basically. So I don't think you have to worry about Scherzer and Strasburg.
I was halfway joking with Giolito.
Yeah, yeah. No, but he does
and Scherzer,
have that reputation.
To the point in terms of workload where it doesn't matter. I mean, he could throw 250 innings and be no worse for wear. I mean, as much as any
Although,
pitcher
actually,
throws 250
innings.
Although,
actually, the one game last year where he threw, what, I want to say it was 120-something or maybe 130.
Yeah.
And he seemed like he wasn't
pitches?
Right. Pitches, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't as right for
right.
a few starts after that. Right. But I don't think there's a whole lot of impact here. Yeah, it's probably not great for Trey Turner or Michael Taylor. At this point, I'm not mad if it's Clint Robinson over Michael Taylor. Robinson had a pretty nice season last year, and Taylor to me was a disappointment. And, you know, but, Jason Wirth was clearly unhappy with Matt Williams. Dusty Baker's reputedly a manager that players like to play for. Maybe it's good news for somebody like Jason Wirth.
All right, I will. We don't need to do any more news and notes. There's not that much going on. John Heyman has like everything in the world covered in his Inside Baseball columns. You can check that out on CBSSports.com/MLB. So the only two players I came up with for this exercise, I want to give you guys the floor and let you really. I want to develop the young talent on this podcast. Let you spread your wings.
Is that what we are?
Your talent. Yeah. So I forget who's younger. Me or
that
Scott,
wasn't fair to
I
Scott.
Am?
Who's younger between the two of us, Adam?
Yeah,
it's you.
Okay, yeah. So
all right, I guess you can call Scott old after all.
You guys are the cagey veterans. Todd Frazier
like
and Chris
apart. I mean,
what's that?
You and I are like months apart.
Yeah, I know. You old fart. All right, the two guys I came up with were Chris Bryan and Todd Frazier. Frazier, for obvious reasons, is just, you know, are you going to be spooked by the first half, second half stuff that we've seen the last 2 years? And Bryant, just, is he going to be too streaky? Are the strikeouts a concern? Are the strikeouts a concern? Or could he actually be a total steal at second, at third base with, you know, the other guys going ahead of him, but maybe he has just as much upside? Like, where are you on Frazier and Chris Bryant?
I feel like this is where you may have a disadvantage in this exercise, Adam, because you haven't actually gone through and rank the players. To me, the only question with both of these guys is which do you put in ahead of the other? Because if I'm going down my third base rankings, tell me where the drop-off is. Donaldson, Machado, Arenado, Bryant, Frazier, Carpenter, Rendon, Seager, Franco.
Well,
probably
okay,
right,
so I know you're going to say that
Carpenter, right?
After the first three, there's a drop-off, right? Is that what you're going to say?
Well, the biggest drop-off, I feel like, is even the two after that, Bryant and Frazier, mm-hmm. and then Carpenter and Rendon following. So, before the last month of the season, I actually had Frazier ahead of Bryant. Frazier didn't really turn things around during that awful second half in September, so I went ahead and put Bryant ahead, who did have a very strong finish. But I feel like we're looking at 260, 270 batting average, 30 to 35 home runs from each of them, quite honestly. So it doesn't make a huge difference to me. I'll go with Bryant just because I feel like there's a chance he can be even a little better than that.
Yeah, I think the ceiling for Frazier is to pull up behind those three guys at the top, Donaldson, Machado, Arenado. But yeah, I think Bryant could actually be among them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would go Bryant fourth. And I'd give some consideration to putting Matt Carpenter ahead of Frazier. I think they're pretty even. So I actually see the drop-off being after the sixth, whether it's Frazier or Carpenter.
What is Carpenter going to do next year? Is he going to hit 25 home runs again, or is he going to be a points league specialist?
That's my reluctance because he more than doubled his previous career high in home runs. So I feel like I'm just guessing, honestly,
yeah.
What he can do in terms of home runs. And if they're not there, he's not that special in Roto.
No, right. If that's true, if he reverts back to the guy that he was before. I like the fact that he's shown us now that he can excel, you know, both in both formats, and maybe we get, you know, a new superpowered version of Carpenter that hits for the same power and a little bit better of an average.
Fellas, the floor is yours. You gave me a whole list of players. Just pick maybe three or four that you want to focus on. Al, you're up, sir.
All right. Let's start with Brandon Phillips.
Ew.
All right, why do you say ew?
Why would I want Brandon Phillips? I know he was actually pretty good, but like he's old. He's had some bad, bad seasons lately. I don't want anything to do with Brandon Phillips outside of NL only.
Well, this is why it's hard for me, because I thought I had my story on him all worked out, which was pretty much what you just said. He's old,
ew.
He's washed up.
Yeah,
he was really good last year, and it took me, you know, probably like 5 months to kind of get with that and give him the credit that he deserved, because he ran more and stole bases efficiently. He struck out less. Everything he did was backed up by improvements in the skill indicators. Now, I don't think he's a great bet to even maintain that because of his age, but I think it's a mistake now to just say, oh, I don't want anything to do with him. He could wind up being a steal again, and it makes it hard for me to know exactly how much to bring him down from where he ranked last season.
Well, I alluded to second base being a pretty deep position, at least compared to third base. So I'm not especially motivated to gamble on Phillips. I see it kind of like how Jimmy Rollins was coming into this year. He had this stretch of several years where it was steady decline, and then a year where it looked like he was about rock bottom. And then he came surging back in 2014 out of nowhere at an advanced age where nobody would have expected it. And so it would have been easy to move him back up in the rankings because of it heading into this season. And I think I did to some degree. And he was a disaster. So I kind of feel like Phillips could fall in that same category in 2016. And, you know, to me, the questionables you'd consider ranking him ahead of are like Logan Forsythe and DJ LeMahieu, Howie Kendrick. If you like those better than Phillips, then it's going to be harder to have Phillips higher than about 19th at second base, which is where I have him.
Is it even a question, Colton Wong or Brandon Phillips?
See, I think it is. Because, I mean, Wong's obviously got youth on his side, but in terms of the performance, I have to give some consider. And because this is a tough one, because I don't know which way I'm going to go yet.
Yeah.
But I could see going Phillips over Wong.
If we could pivot to Wong, because Wong was one I actually had on my list. And, you know, as a contrast to what you were saying, I have him 8th compared to Phillips at 19th. And you're right, based on 2015 performance, they don't deserve to be that far apart. But I think second base being this kind of mass of players with little differentiating them, a bunch of guys who could be like 12 to 15 homers, 15 to 20 steals, and how do you make sense of all that? I think it makes sense to go for a guy like Wong, who's clearly, you know, in the upswing of his career, as opposed to Phillips, who's on the other end. And I was a little disappointed by Wong's production this year, but he still makes contact at a better than average rate. And, you know, as a guy who's back to back seasons, double digit home runs and steals, if he ripped off a 2020 season in 2016, I don't think it'd be at all surprising. And that would be a way he could distinguish himself from that mass of second basemen that are all the same. And I'm not sure every second baseman has a way of doing that.
Next player, Mr. Melchior.
All righty. How about, let's stay in the middle infield here, as Drubal Cabrera, who I'm almost positive is going to make my sleeper list, and I could see targeting him, but there's a couple questions about where to rank him, and one is just, how are other people going to value him? Because I suspect that the other people aren't going to be as high on Cabrera as I am.
Yeah, let me speak for average Joe fantasy player. I have no interest in his Drubal Cabrera. Is that kind of where what you think most people are going to be like?
What did you say? I missed it.
Yeah, me
too. I said I have no interest in his Drubal Cabrera.
Oh, I thought you were going to use like a funny voice or something. There's no way I'm drafting as Drubal Cabrera.
As Drubal Cabrera? You guys are idiots. You suck, CBS.
That's more like it.
Yeah, there you go.
There
no,
you
I,
go.
I don't, nope, why would I nope. want it to Drubal Cabrera?
No, well, heart. All right. Twitter hearts for you.
I was actually just writing on him, so I've actually got some stats right up here on my laptop. So he started to get hot. The date I pinpointed was June 18th. So we're talking about well more than half the season. From there on out, he was hitting really well. He also missed some time, and even in spite of that, he was 5th in roto value. And I apologize, I'm buying myself some time to look up the head-to-head value because I toggled the third base for our Chris Bryant discussion. But I think he was 7th at shortstop. And wouldn't you know, I just hit the wrong thing. So,
oh, wow. So close.
7th, yes.
There you go.
And he was 1st in the second half. So this is excluding part of that hot streak, but he was in the second half. No other shortstop had as many fantasy points per plate appearance as Cabrera.
Wow.
And I like the fact that it was built on power, and that's a skill that he showed earlier in his career. and he did this for more than half a season. So I think he's worth targeting at a position where there's I think, a lot of depth, but not necessarily much at the top. And I think Lindor is risky. I think a lot of the – I don't think Correa is necessarily that risky. But I think some of the names at the top, the younger ones, have some risk. And if you don't want to go, you know, invest in those guys, I could definitely see target Cabrera. But it's, you know, do you trust that those 3.5 months of production and how hard do you have to go after them to get them?
I know I'm a little further along in my rankings than you are, so I'm going to get an idea of where you have them. I'm going to start where I have them and work our way up. So I have them 17th. Do you prefer Asdrubal Cabrera to Gene Segura?
Definitely.
Jed Jerko?
Definitely.
Marcus Semien?
Definitely.
Eugenio Suarez?
That's tougher, but yeah, I think I'm going to go Asdrubal there too.
Johnny Peralta?
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. Ketel Marte?
Here's where it gets tricky. Probably not. I know, I'm probably going to have Marte right around 12th, so that would
We're at 11th in my rankings.
Yeah.
So you're looking at Cabrera. You consider him about a top 12 shortstop.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much separation between those names I rattled off. I mean, I have more faith in Peralta just because of track record, and I feel like guys like Semien and Jerko have more upside, but to me, at that point in the shortstop rankings, is 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other.
I guess I thought Asdrubal Cabrera was older than he is, but he's only 29.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
It's true.
Okay. Yeah, see, this is why average Joe fantasy player needs to listen to the podcast. Good stuff. All right, Scott, you're up. Next guy.
All right. Let's talk a little about Yasmani Grandal. Because I think we were all pretty thrilled with what he did in the first half. Made an all-star team, 927 OPS. And I think a lot of us had him pegged as a sleeper or a breakout, one of those coming into the year, and he looked like it happened. And then came the second half, when that 927 OPS became a 498 OPS, and he started playing only like half the time and was basically completely useless. And obviously, that's the last we've seen of Grandal. Now, he wasn't completely healthy, battling a shoulder injury, obviously able to play through it because he did, but you have to think it affected his performance to some degree. He ended up having surgery soon after the Dodgers were eliminated. They thought he might have a torn labrum. He didn't, so that never got repaired. So, you know, how bad was the injury? Did the injury have to be to affect his performance to the extent that it did? And how much of it was, okay, Grandal was playing over his head in the first half? And then you throw another wrinkle in there. Even when Grandal was doing great in the first half, the point production was kind of underwhelming because Don Mattingly didn't like using him a lot. Don Mattingly's not there anymore. So how does that affect his value? Does he go up because of it? I don't know. I have him 11th at catcher right now, behind another very hard player to rank, Matt Wieters. A few spots behind somebody like Stephen Vogt, who I would also consider difficult to rank. But I think Grandal has top five potential, so it's a potentially rewarding number 11 catcher there.
You have him behind Vogt?
Yes.
I feel like Vogt's not really very good after the first month of the season.
It's so hard to pin it on a maybe he's inconsistent. Maybe it's hard to trust him to be healthy.
Oh, no, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I'm thinking of Derek Norris, not Stephen Vogt.
I do have Grandal 4 spots ahead of Derek Norris.
Okay, I feel better about it now.
Yes.
I apologize.
You just think all West Coast catchers are the same.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's East Coast bias right there.
All right, Al. Someone else?
All right, let's go to pitchers. Johnny Cueto.
Yeah.
What to do? Now, I think we've talked about him before. I think Scott and I both agreed we were going to have him in the 20 to 25 range, if I recall our discussion.
I am 23rd.
Yeah. And but I could see, you know, bumping him up. more likely. I could see maybe even letting him go a little lower. But, you know, again, this is all based on the last couple of months of the season. But it was pretty brutal. You know, and it wasn't just a case of that the, you know, the results weren't good. You know, a lot of Cueto's problem was just that he wasn't working in the zone and he wasn't particularly deceptive, so he wasn't getting a lot of chases.
And there's a possibility an elbow issue was influencing those numbers, which is still unresolved.
Yeah, so you want
to
hear it?
That's concerning to me. That's there are, not to kind of hijack your discussion here, but there are, I think, three pitchers who I am really scared are going to have Tommy John surgery before they have a chance to throw a regular season pitch next year. Cueto's one of them. Michael Pineda's another one of them, because he was dealing with a forearm issue down the stretch. And I wasn't prepared to talk about this. It just happened to come up. So I don't have the third offhand. But if I think of it, I'll let you know. Any pitcher who missed time in the second half with either an elbow issue or a forearm issue and their production seemed to suffer because of it, that's a red flag for me. That's me reminding myself that I should have known better about Yu Darvish going into this spring.
You want to hear a cool stat on Joe? Well, it's not such a cool stat, but an interesting stat on Cueto. He struck out more than five batters one time in his last 10 starts, including the postseason. So we're doing the opening line podcast last week, and these MLB prop bets come up for the Cueto DeGrom start. And the prop bet was Cueto over under 5.5 strikeouts. So I'm like, oh, you got to take the under. You got to take the under. He hasn't struck out more than once in his last 9 starts at the time going into the start. And he's probably not going to pitch that well. He might throw like 6 innings or something. He throws a freaking complete game. And only strikes out 4 guys.
Ah, come on.
So well, I got the under right. That helps.
That's an effect on performance. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, so Cueto is difficult to rank. We've talked a lot about him. Al, one more, and then we'll throw it over to Scott.
All right, well, let's toss out another pitcher there, Sonny Gray, who I think, you know, is maybe in some ways tougher because I think you're probably going to have to be more aggressive to get him maybe than Cueto. But I think there's some reasons for concern there as well. His velocity was down late in the year, not throwing as many strikes.
You're on a bit of a roller coaster with Sonny Gray, aren't you?
What's that?
You're on a bit of a roller coaster with him.
I really am. Yeah, you've noticed because, yeah, he was a sleeper of mine, I think, 2 seasons ago. And he was on my bust list this year, so it's he's been all over the place, and I've been all over the place right there with him.
What Sonny Gray is?
Yeah,
Sonny Gray sweeping the clouds away.
Well, where do you have him ranked, Al? Is he top 12?
Oh no, definitely Gray. No, definitely not top 12. I would say actually at this point, I might have him below Cueto.
Oh my God, he's like a Cy Young candidate.
Well, he's the Cy Young candidate, or is he the guy in the second half who had a 3.73 ERA and a 1.26 whip?
I only have him 21st, Adam. That's 2 spots ahead of Cueto.
Wow.
But
that's very surprising.
Like there's 2 dozen Cy Young candidates now. It's not.
I see similar variance with him. He could be, I don't know about top 12. I think that's maybe stretching a little, but top 15 he could certainly be. But he could be in the lower part of my top 30, too.
All right, Adam, tell me which of these pitchers you'd rather have than Sonny Gray.
I'd rather have Sonny Gray over this guy.
You would rather have Sonny Gray over this guy. So.
All right, go for it.
It's Noah Syndergaard, Cole Hamels, John Lester, Carlos Carrasco, Felix Hernandez, Garrett Cole, Chris Archer. If you haven't said it yet.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about Syndergaard and Hamels. And I guess he's pretty similar to Syndergaard, Hamels, and Lester. I think I'd rather have him than Lester.
Well, I mean, no matter how you look at it, that's outside the top 15, so.
Okay. But I do want to point one thing out here.
Sure.
You mentioned his second half ERA. It was all August because he had a 2 ERA in – oh, no, it was all September. He had an ERA of 2 in August. He had a 2.37 ERA in July. He had a 6.84 ERA in September.
Yeah, but you looked at the peripherals for the whole second half were consistently blah, and that might even be generous. In August and September, he averaged more than 1.2 homers per nine in each month. Didn't average seven strikeouts per nine in either month. And okay, the control was a little better in August, but I mean, it's not a good picture.
For me, it's even simpler than that with Sonny Gray. All those guys I listed off have strikeout per inning potential, and he doesn't. So that's an immediate limit to his upside. And if you're confident they're going to pitch a similar number of innings, go for the higher upside guy.
All right. Makes sense. Scott, who else are you having trouble ranking this year?
Ian, well, yeah, since I've already gotten the name halfway out. Ian Kinsler.
I thought you were going to go Desmond, for what's worth.
Oh, yeah?
And I thought you were going Kennedy, so how about that?
All those Ians. No, Ian Kinsler's the one. And I've been inching him up the rankings pretty much ever since the season ended. I don't think he's that good anymore offensively, if I'm going to be blunt about it. His home run and steal totals have declined steadily over the last few years. He's going to be 34 next year, so definitely at an age where you expect a middle infielder to drop off. And last year got to the point where you can't even be confident he's going to get double digits in either category next season, in either home runs or stolen bases, provided the trend continues, because he was barely 10-10 this year. And yet he was the fifth best second baseman in head-to-head points leagues. And he still doesn't strike out much, which puts him in good shape. It gives him a chance of having a high batting average. He still bats at the top of a lineup that has Miguel Cabrera and JD Martinez hitting in the middle. And I feel like the last couple years, that's what's masked his decline, is the supporting cast, the runs scored, maybe even the RBI. He bats leadoff, so I don't think he'd have many, but he might have a higher than average number for a leadoff hitter. And the supporting cast doesn't figure to change. So is he just going to keep getting away with it next year and still be top five? I don't feel confident predicting that, but I feel like if I drop him beyond the top 10, you know, in another lineup, it might make sense to do that. But with the Tigers, I feel like I'm just going to end up being wrong.
Yeah, he scored 100 runs in 2014, and Kinsler scored 94 runs in 2015. Is he just one of those guys that benefits from being pretty darn healthy since 2011 on? He's played 155 games or more in four or five seasons.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that, because those last five seasons, yeah, he's been a model of health. The first five seasons of his career, that was the red flag with him.
Right.
He couldn't stay healthy for even 140 games. Did it once in the first 4 or 5 years of his career. So, I mean, at age 34, I wouldn't expect him to be healthier, but it's I'm starting to believe that health is less and less predictable, because you see all these you see enough exceptions that they start to not seem like exceptions, like Nelson Cruz being another example. Another player who I'm going to get to next, Carlos Gonzalez, just had his healthiest season.
Remember, there used to be a knock on Evan Longoria being an injury risk, and he's one of the Iron Men now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, it's a great mystery in sports. For football, for baseball, for anything fantasy, it's just really hard to tell. I mean, Tulowitzki had a relatively healthy season until the end, and you know, it gives me headaches. My general strategy is just I try to avoid the really injury-prone guys with my first two picks, but then, like, when you're getting Kinsler, I don't really care at that point, because,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I agree, Scott. He's a tricky one. And in the second half, he made things a little more complicated. He hit eight home runs, so you saw a little bit more of the power. That might not sound overwhelming, but there's not that many big power guys at second base. And also hit 325 in the second half with the lack of strikeouts. And I know for a good portion of the season, he was going the other way a lot, which is something, again, he didn't do much earlier in his career. So it's kind of hard to know who he is at this point.
Kinsler or Zobrist next year?
My gut says Zobrist.
I have Kinsler one spot ahead. It's because Zobrist is even older.
Kinsler or Kipnis?
Kipnis. But I say it confidently because he's about a decade younger, but I'm not really that confident in what the output's going to be because he, you know, he's coming off back-to-back years without double-digit home runs himself. So, you know, what I'm worried Kinsler will become, Kipnis kind of just was.
Yeah, and he only stole 12 bases. He just hit a ton of doubles.
Right.
Yep.
12 out of 20.
I'd actually go Kinsler.
All right, one more, Scott, and we'll do some emails.
Well, have we talked about this with Cargo a lot already, Carlos Gonzalez?
I don't think so.
Because I think he might be the single most difficult player to rank for 2016. He set career highs in home runs and games played last year. Career highs for a guy we used to routinely draft in the first round. And I don't think I'd touch him even in like the third or fourth round. Because even with that monster second half, and it basically was all the second half, because, you know, about mid-season, we were talking about him as a drop candidate. And then he just went bananas thereafter. You know, as good as he was, he's a guy who hasn't really shaken the injury-prone label with me. And in his case, the injuries were so varied and consistent that it looked like it was starting to affect his production. Now, maybe you could argue the second half wipes that completely clean because the production was fine. I can't feel that way. And I feel like there's enough outfielders who are in the same boat, those potential 40-homer guys who have injury risk or strikeout risk or age risk. Specifically, I'm talking about Nelson Cruz and Chris Davis. And I still feel like Carlos Gonzalez is the riskiest of the three.
Well, I think the injuries clearly have affected his performance because he only stole 3 bases last year.
Yeah.
So that's not part of his skill set anymore, and he stole 2 bases, excuse me, and he hit 40 home runs with a .271 batting average. All right, so Scott says he would be hesitant to take him in the fourth round. Al, how about you?
Yeah, I have to admit, I mean, that seems like a perfectly reasonable place to take him. But to make somebody that risky, you know, a cornerstone of my offense, I couldn't see doing it.
There's really this terrible stretch in the outfield rankings. And just since yesterday, I nearly turned them completely upside down, where they're all this kind of player. It's guys like Yoenis Cespedes, Ryan Braun coming back from back surgery, the three I already mentioned, Cargo, Chris Davis, Nelson Cruz, Lorenzo Cain, who has really only had the 1 year where he's performed anything close to that standard. And that's the number 12 through 17 range in my outfield rankings. And it's like, just roll a dice with those guys because, or roll a die. You want to roll a dice because that's plural. Roll the dice.
Yes.
With those guys. And you have an equal chance of hitting with all of them.
Okay, are you ready to roll the emails?
Sounds like Scott's ready to play Stratomatic.
Stratomatic.
All these dice.
Now are you ready for emails?
I'm ready.
FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Put baseball podcast in the subject line. Here we go. Of course I'm going to lead with this one. It is from someone who wanted to remain anonymous, and it's not from me, I promise, or anyone related to me. In support of Adam and his belief that Trout should be chosen over Harper. How could it be that someone would suggest Harper over Trout? The basic tenets of a first-round draft pick are reliability and dependability. First-rounders are players who produce all year, every year. The first-round selection should be an anti-risk pick, as Scott says with his Kershaw ranking. Trout has been the most consistent fantasy player in terms of overall production the last 3 years. How many other fantasy players have finished top 12 the last three seasons? Harper has only reached 600 at-bats once in his career. He's a hard-nosed play away from a six-week DL stint, blah, blah, blah. I pretty much agree with all of that. Take that, Scott White.
First of all, he hasn't been the most consistent player the last 3 years because his stolen bases have dropped drastically.
But has there been a fantasy player who has consistently ranked as high as him at the end of the year over the last 3 years?
Well, look, AJ Pollock was better last year, so...
Are you answering the question, young man?
I get the point. I get the point you're making in that you really can't go wrong with Trout. But I feel like we could have made this argument for Trout himself coming off his rookie season, and we all would have been dead wrong. So,
what argument?
I mean, I don't have a problem with somebody taking Trout ahead of Harper. I just think Harper's better.
I'm going to look up the three-year averages right now. Mike Trout is number one among hitters. Miguel Cabrera is two.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
But I mean, what we're reading to Harper is the surge that we were expecting from him.
Okay.
And I think that's part of the allure there, is that this was something that we were expecting, and he delivered it, and he delivered it in a huge way.
Wasn't out of nowhere.
And so we're buying into it, you know, even though he was a little bit behind Trout, you know, in terms of getting to that point.
Well, but he also was a little bit behind Trout in terms of fantasy production before Trout got hurt. That's what I think gets lost in this argument, because I looked up the numbers on our last podcast or two podcasts ago, and Trout actually outscored Harper until the injury. I think through the end of July, maybe the end of August. I don't remember, whatever it was. Trout was better, which surprised even me.
It Mr. surprises Trout. Me, especially if you're telling me this for more than the first time.
Yeah. You know what? I'll try to look it up again. Let me read the email, denial. And then I'll try to get it again. From Ben in Toronto. Dear Cap'n, Count, and Crackle.
Crackle?
Yeah, these are cereal. This is like Snap, Crackle, and Pop. Count Chocula, Cap'n Crunch.
Crackle. Oh, Snap, Crackle, and Pop. I've never separated them into different entities, so
it's
I didn't
confusing.
Recognize it. Yeah.
He's in a 14-team Dynasty League. He needs to drop four players. So here's the list to choose from. Drop four. Jerko, Alex Guerrero, JP, Realmuto, Bird, Dickey, Hamill, and Perkins. Jerko, Guerrero, Realmuto, Bird.
Exciting names.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right?
Guerrero for sure.
Yeah.
You're dropping Guerrero?
Marlon Bird.
Yeah, Marlon Bird would be my second.
Between R.A. Dickey and Jason Hamill.
Sorry, so...
I think I'm dropping Dickey. Dropping Guerrero, Bird, and Dickey, and keeping Jerko, Realmuto, Hamill, and Perkins.
You have to keep two and drop four, not vice versa.
I dropped three. I thought I was keeping four. All right, yeah. So I got to drop one more?
Oh, yeah, there are seven names. Sorry,
okay,
you have to
drop
keep
Hamill.
Three and drop four.
Drop Hamill. Guerrero, Bird, Dickey, Hamill.
Okay. This is from Chris in the ICT. He's a Royals fan. He's a big listener. Congratulations, Chris, on your victory. He says, Dear Jim, Dick, and Ned...
That'd be Fryhauser and Yost.
And Yost.
Yost.
When evaluating keepers, how do you weigh in factors like aging stars and the trends of your league mates, or do you ignore these and just keep the best talent?
Depends. How many keepers are there? How big is the league? How much roster turnover, basically? Both of those factor into that third question. If there's not much roster turnover, I don't weigh age that much really at all, because the players you're considering keeping this year would likely be completely different from the players you consider keeping next year. But if there's minimal roster turnover, so like every team's keeping eight players and up, let's say, then it begins to have a bigger impact. I would probably keep somebody let me find a good example of my outfield rankings. I'd probably keep somebody like Kyle Schwarber over Nelson Cruz in that case.
Mentally, I was going Kyle Schwarber, Scott. Kyle Schwarber.
Are you done speaking?
Yeah.
Do you
have
to be?
I like that... distinction that the less turnover there is, then the more of a consideration, the more dilemmas you have.
All right, here we go. You gave me just enough time to pull up the stats.
Alrighty.
April 1st to July 31st. Looking at fantasy points, Paul Goldschmidt won 433. 30 points behind him, Mike Trout number two with 403 points, and Bryce Harper three with 395.5. How about in Roto?
Right.
Mike Trout number one. Bryce Harper number two.
Go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
Oh, I didn't know you were talking. I'm sorry about that.
We both kept talking over each other.
Okay. Goldschmidt was one. You know what? It went 1, 2, 3, same order in both points and Roto. Goldschmidt, Trout, Harper until August 1st.
All right. So what's the explanation here? Because that seems to defy my expectations.
Explanations, everybody's forgetting about Goldie.
No, really okay, this is the explanation, is that we forgot how good Mike Trout was. From April 1st to July 31st, Harper was 330 with 29 home runs and 68 RBI. Trout was 317 with three more home runs and one fewer RBI. They were very, very, very similar. But, you know, the batting average was better for Harper, but Trout actually out-homered him in that stretch. And I think we kind of take Harper Trout for granted a little bit, and his season might have been even better than we thought before that stupid injury bugged him for about a month.
Yeah, I just think Harper's better. I don't know what to tell you. They're both awesome.
I don't think you really feel that way. I think you're going to come around. I think I got you.
You got me a little bit. I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
Harper's OPS was 200. No, not 200 points higher. It was like 120 points higher than Trout's. Oh, but Trout's August doesn't count. Yeah, it does.
No, it really doesn't. Like, I really don't think it does. I think I'm going to look at the 3 years of Trout and take away when he was clearly playing hurt.
I'm sure Harper never had anything physically happening to him at any point this season.
Hey, look, if you can tell me that both of them are going to stay completely healthy the entire season, it's a total toss-up. But if injury is going to be the deciding factor here, because we agree they're both equally as good, then I'm going to say that Harper has a much better chance of getting hurt. All right.
I'm adding both of them to my list of hard to know where to rank them.
Two or three. What's it going to be? One more email here from Matt in Wisconsin. Hello, Watney, Beck, and Johansson. We can look at
Scarlets. I don't know.
Yeah. I was like, is there a Scarlet Beck?
All right, looking for some help with keepers. We start 7 pitchers, any combination of starters and relievers, and 3 outfielders, 3 additional utility. So he's got Chris Bryant in the 23rd round and Rizzo in the 8th. He needs one more from this list. Jason Kipnis in the 7th, Jock Peterson in the 15th, and Andrew Miller in the 22nd. Kipnis in the 7th, Peterson in the 15th, Miller in the 22nd.
I think Kipnis in the 7th isn't even really great value. So it's definitely between the other two. I think I'd probably go Miller. I'll go Miller because he needs a decision. So I'm going Miller.
Yeah, I'm not sure 15th is great value for Peterson either. I'm trying to remember where I have him ranked, but I know in my rankings I rank him awfully generously just given the numbers relative to those I have ranked around him. And I'm still not sure he comes out as a 15th rounder, so I'm also going Miller.
Well, that was fun. Always love talking baseball with you guys.
Doesn't happen enough these days, Adam.
I would have to disagree with that. I'm good with once a week.
Wheeling and dealing in the baseball world. Things are about to get interesting.
Calm before the storm.
Okay. All right. I hope so. We need more fodder for the podcast, no doubt. So
it's going to happen.
AFL Fall Stars game this week.
Oh, perfect. Can't wait. Send us your emails about the Arizona Fall League, whatever else you want to talk about, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Alan Scott, thanks again, guys.
Always fun.
See ya.
That's Al Melchior and Scott White. I'm Adam Azer, and we'll talk to you next time on Fantasy Baseball Today.